There is a little known but I think important fact about modern spiritual history that probably changed the course of your life and you don't even know it. I didn't know it. It's interesting how God moves in moments that are often so small that we don't pay attention. One day at a train station, C.S. Lewis was waiting to catch a train, and he went into a bookshop and was looking around for something to take his mind off of his work and his troubles, something to read, and he picked up a little book on that day by a man named George MacDonald. And George MacDonald was a writer unlike any that C.S. Lewis had ever encountered. He was somebody who could tell a really good story, and he could also communicate the Christian faith with great clarity, intuitively. C.S. Lewis was entranced. In fact, he later said that that was one of the before and after moments of his life, wandering around in a bookshop and finding a book by George MacDonald. He said the other most important moment was when he was riding in the sidecar of a motorcycle on the way to the Whipsnade Zoo and decided that God was real. George MacDonald was a Congregationalist minister who also was a writer. Writes beautiful, beautiful stories of faith and courage and the magic of discovering that God is in the world. C.S. Lewis once said that it was as though I had crossed a great frontier in reading George MacDonald. I highly recommend George MacDonald's books to you. One of the things that he once said was that no indulgence of passion destroys the spiritual nature so much as respectable selfishness. Say it again. No indulgence of passion destroys the spiritual nature so much as respectable selfishness. That's the picture we have in today's reading. A respectable selfishness. The rich man, Dives, and Lazarus. Jesus is sharing a parable about a rich man who is sleepwalking through his life under the veil of a respectable selfishness. This rich man is blind and cold to the suffering that's in his midst, the suffering that's down at the end of the driveway, the suffering that's down at the gate, the suffering that's down at the curb, at the mailbox. The suffering that's at home. Something is preventing this rich man from seeing what is real. And perhaps this blindness is caused by a spiritual misunderstanding, wrong thinking, a respectable selfishness. That's what Jesus is implying. Throughout this chapter in Luke's gospel, Jesus has been sparring with some of the Pharisees about how we should understand money and righteousness, and how some of the Pharisees seek to justify themselves with money. Earlier in the chapter, he says, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God." What he's saying is that God can see through the posture you take behind your money. God can see through the posture that you take behind your status. God can see you. And so Jesus is pricking the bubble that lives in some of the Pharisees' thinking. This mistaken assumption that people with wealth are more blessed. that people with wealth are more righteous, that people with wealth are better people than people who don't have wealth. Some of the Pharisees like to think that they were spiritually justified and the others as righteous because of their wealth. But Jesus is pointing out with this parable that actually, you know, the blessings of wealth might make it more difficult. The blessings of wealth might bring an additional gravity for living righteously in the eyes of God. It might be harder. The punchline of this parable, like so much of what Jesus teaches, is very simple. In the presence of God, there will be a great reversal of fortunes. For many, there will be a great reversal. When they die, there will be a great reversal. Because those who've gotten used to being first will be the last. And those who've gotten used to being last will be the first. And so because Jesus loves us, he's giving us a warning about sleepwalking through life. In my own life, my own good fortune, my own blessings, my own wealth, they can become a kind of drug of choice, a sort of narcotic that would encourage me to sleepwalk through my life. You know, we might miss seeing Lazarus at the gate because we have fooled ourselves into believing that wealth actually equals goodness, or vice versa, that poverty indicates a lack of goodness. That's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is telling a story to warn us against the temptation and delusion of maintaining a respectable selfishness while our human beings are suffering in our midst. And so we might ask ourselves the question, where is Lazarus in our lives? Where is Lazarus today? Lazarus is probably cutting the grass somewhere. Or maybe Lazarus is emptying the garbage in one of the hotel rooms, or washing the sheets in one of the hotel rooms where we've stayed. Or maybe Lazarus is standing under that underpass down there next to the Taco Bell, holding a cardboard sign. Or Lazarus might be down having lunch at the Hope House. Or Lazarus might be out at the Salvation Army today. Lazarus might be lying in a cot in prison today. But if we're willing to look, we all know that we will see Lazarus in our streets. Each of us knows this so well. The question is, are we sleepwalking? There was a couple I know who I believe found a Lazarus in their world. And one of them was a middle school teacher, and the other of this couple worked for a nonprofit. And they were faithful in their church, and they loved to read, and they sometimes played golf, and they traveled a bit, and they had just reached the point of having an empty nest. They were living a life that would be familiar to anyone in this room. Some of you might recall back in the 1990s when Catholic Charities and the Red Cross began to participate with other international organizations to relocate thousands of African children throughout the United States who had survived what might be one of the most horrendous experiences of modern history. And those were the great civil wars of the Sudan in North Africa. And Americans at the time had heard about it in the news, but as we all know, most of us are so busy with other things. We're so busy with other things to maybe really take notice. And it wasn't until I went to some of the malls or went to the movie or went to some of the schools in the city where I was living, sometimes I would see them at church, that the awareness of the Sudanese plight began to surface in my consciousness. Because in town I began to see these beautiful people who looked nothing like anyone that I knew. Because they were very tall, very slender, very dark, and very graceful. And they carried themselves with a quiet dignity and a gentleness and a demeanor that was very, very uncharacteristic of most young Americans that I had met. We began to see them all over Mississippi. And they were called the lost boys and the lost girls of the Sudan. And this middle-aged teacher and nonprofit professional, they were touched by this story that these children from the Sudan, the stories they told of walking sometimes for weeks or months in large packs across the deserts, hungry and afraid and simply waiting for God to take care of them. Because some of them had watched their families and their villages erased and killed with military violence before their very eyes. These children were biblical wanderers. And they were picked up by the UN and the Red Cross, and they were sprinkled across the landscape of Europe and North America. And they began to build new lives from scratch with the help of local communities. And these friends of mine, they could see a child of God. They could see a Lazarus at the gate of our world. And although they could not do everything for every one of these lost boys and girls, they knew they could do something. And so they adopted a lost child. But her name was not Lazarus. Her name is Tabitha. And she is a mother now. Her name is Tabitha Gray. And her mother is Kathy Gray, a retired middle school teacher. And her father, who worked for a nonprofit, is the Right Reverend Duncan Gray, the retired Bishop of Mississippi. And when they took that step in their comfortable and well-ordered lives, I had to take a step back and look at my own comfortable and well-ordered life. I had to look at my own version of maintaining a respectable selfishness. I had to ask myself, am I sleepwalking through God's world? In the cruel, cruel long ago of ancient Rome, anyone who had a child that they did not want could dispose of that child under the protection of the law. And so people would walk outside the walls of the great city of Rome and leave newborn infants beneath bridges and beside trash heaps, because they had not the food or the means to care for these children. In fact, there was an archaeological dig. They discovered an ancient sewer in Rome. It was uncovered, and they discovered that it was clogged with the bones of infants. One of the first ways that Christians began to be known in the ancient, pagan, and cruel world is that they were seen by others going outside of the city gates at night to look under the bridges, to walk along the garbage heaps, to find any little Lazarus who might have been overlooked by a cruel world. Each of us will not be called to adopt a child from the Sudan, but we can leave this room today inspired to wake up and look for Lazarus. And we can share with them from the plenty that we do indeed have. And for most of us, that sharing can happen in places that have meaning for us. Can happen at Hope House. Can happen perhaps on the side of a street. Can happen at the prisons. Can happen in the kitchen here at the church as we make food for the friendship houses of community renewal. It can happen at the boys and the girls club. It can happen in the re-nesting programs. It can happen out at Brentwood Hospital, where our members make friends with children whose families are having difficulty. Help them get a new life. My friends, we can do this. We can see Lazarus. We can live as people who are awake to those that we see on the street corners, maybe at the doorsteps of the church, maybe in our own neighborhoods. My friends, when others look at us, what do they see? As we drive by the gate, what do they see? Do they see us looking under the bridges? Do they see us walking along the garbage heaps? Do they see us stopping at the gate? Or do they just see another generation of religious people who are playing the game of maintaining a comfortable condition of a respectable selfishness?